Support for 89.7 NPR News comes from the James at Ohio State. The best outcomes for treating cancer come from early detection. The James Cancer Diagnostic Center is designed to provide rapid evaluation and a clear diagnosis to those who suspect they have cancer. Learn more at cancer.osu.edu/diagnosticcenter.
Welcome to All Sides with Amy Jurevich. After a year of rocky conditions for researchers across the country, Ohio State University has somehow weathered the storm and shown it can rank with the best in research. Ranking 12th in the nation as far as research expenditures, Ohio State beat out many of the biggest schools across the country. But it wasn't a cakewalk to get there. With funding cuts from public and private companies, and many compromises from former Ohio State President Ted Carter, how did the school fare when it comes to current and future research dollars? Joining us now is John Horak, Vice President of Research at The Ohio State University and leader of the Enterprise for Research, Innovation, and Knowledge. Welcome to the show, John.
Thanks for having me, Amy. It's great to be back.
So the numbers used that ranked Ohio State as 12th in research, they were from fiscal year 2024. Is that correct?
2025, yes. So we released 2025 numbers, but the numbers that put us at number five are from the previous year.
Yes. Okay. Right. Yeah. So that all happened. That's before the news of DOGE and before all the cuts to the National Science Foundation and that whole thing, right?
Well, yeah. As time has gone on, we just kind of roll with the changes and try to make things go as best we can. And we've been fortunate, as you said, to move forward through some of the challenges that are in our environment.
So before we dive into those numbers, we have to talk about the Ohio State news happening right now, because it's happening right now. As of this morning, Ohio State has a new president, Ravi Belamkonda, and Belamkonda was appointed president in January of 2025. He was appointed by former Ohio State President Ted Carter, and Carter called him the most important hire that he made. What do you think of this choice for the new president by the Board of Trustees today?
I'm thrilled. I'm absolutely thrilled. Ravi, as I know him, he's my boss, is an amazing man. He's kind, he's smart, he's innovative, he's a super accomplished scientist, engineer, academician, and also a great leader. And if you could hear his remarks this morning, that you probably can go on the web and listen to his remarks. I think you get the sense that the university is in excellent hands. We are moving forward. We're going to innovate, as Ravi said. We're going to work on hard things that are worth doing. And from the research perspective, those are challenges and opportunities of consequence, where by making discovery and moving that forward in sort of the first link in the value chain of prosperity, we move forward and change people's lives for the better.
He was on this show because he was appointed by former President Carter to lead the AI initiative. So he came on to talk about the AI initiative. And I stumbled over his last name and he calmly just said, everyone calls me Ravi, right?
Yeah, so exactly.
Is he going to go by President Ravi?
You'll have to ask him. He is known to me as Ravi. Mm-hmm. His wife is known to me as Lalitha. She's also an amazing and accomplished scholar and researcher and professional in her own right, the College of Nursing. And so I think you're going to see a very, very positive, forward-moving, and energetic dynamic around the presidency. I just couldn't be happier about where we're at right now.
So how do you think new OSU President Belamkonda will be when it comes to research, his support for your department?
Well, at the end of the day, Ravi is really the person that hired me. So I hope that he said he's been here 400 days. I've been in this job, although I've been at OSU 10 years. I've been in this job 162 days. So I'm newer than him in that regard. And I think Ravi hired me, I hope, because we share a view, as I said, that research is the very first link in the value chain of prosperity. And that's not just wealth, but that's well-being. That's a positive community. That's to be known, cared about, challenged, all the things that go with that. For me, research is the very first link in making that happen. You know, several hundred years ago, there's a person named Kepler, and he's staring up in the sky, and he's trying to figure out what are the planets doing. And he comes up with these laws, and you know, people are like, "Why are you doing that?" I'm trying to avoid the plague. But yet, it's the way in which things move in space that govern how every satellite flies and how every rocket gets there, right? And so this is what I mean by the first link. It may not be obvious at first. Sometimes it is. Like we're headed down a path to try to solve why people get cancer. Okay, that's good. We understand that. But research, creative inquiry, generates all kinds of interesting outcomes. Einstein's another good example in the beginning of the 20th century. He's got a pen and paper, and he's coming up with general relativity. And people are like, what is that? And the answer is every day you open your GPS or your wayfinder, you are a commercial consumer of general relativity. Otherwise, you won't find where you're going. Has to do with clocks on satellites and ticking at different times. But if you don't have general relativity correction built into GPS, you might land your airplane in the wrong place, or the pizza delivery person might take it next door. You just don't, you won't get a good answer. So this research as innovation and moving things forward, and we do it at scale at Ohio State in some amazing areas, healthcare and AI and energy, quantum, transportation, agriculture, astrophysics, you name it.
So I was trying to find an org chart for Ohio State, and I failed to find one. And so now you've just taught me. I thought you were hired by President Carter. So you were not. You were hired by the provost.
Yeah, I interviewed by Zoom with the president. I happened to have been in on official business in South America, Uruguay, with working some space activities. But I met in many times in person with Ravi. I also met with many members of the Board of Trustees in person because this was Ravi's hire. Mm-hmm. Because in the way we're structured, the Ravi, previously anyway, until today, he's the executive vice president and provost, and both academic affairs and research report into him. So he is literally my boss. Maybe I'll get a new one. Looking forward to that. But I'm very, very excited to have him as our president, 18th president.
Did you have much interaction with former OSU President Ted Carter in your position?
Only when it was appropriate. I don't know how to characterize it, a lot or not. But I think the interactions I had with him were around events and those kinds of things. But my day-to-day work is with Ravi.
So at the start of the Trump administration, President Trump targeted schools like Harvard and Columbia, sent them letters instructing them to scale back on DEI initiatives, among other things, or else they would lose funding. And their research funding came into play here. So former Ohio State President Ted Carter was seen by many on campus as giving into those demands. To keep funding coming to Ohio State. Do you believe that he did?
So I can't say whether he gave in or didn't give in. I didn't have a tremendous amount of insight into that because my job is to keep the airplane flying, keep the ship moving. And we always respond to things in our external environment, no matter what they are. I think one of the strengths that we have at Ohio State is that our research portfolio is very diversified. So we have strong research for the federal government. We have strong research for industry. And within those, we have many different portfolios from healthcare, medicine, AI, energy, quantum, materials. And so you can almost see, almost like on an equalizer that you might have here, where, you know, things are going up and things are going down. I have to pay attention to the overall envelope. And so some of the challenges, it hit some of the liberal arts professors, so, you know, less technical, a little harder. And in other places, it's up. And so we have to take care of the places where the challenges occur, celebrate the victories, and hopefully keep the overall ensemble moving forward for the people of Ohio and for the United States. And to this point, fifth in the country. Number 12 in fifth best university.
Fifth best university.
And then 12th in the United States for research.
And I said that Bellum Conda was appointed president. I meant he was appointed provost in January of 2025. Yeah. So he was provost in January 2025. He was appointed president today.
Yeah, he was very clear. It's 400 days in.
400 days in, yes. And so, but OSU President Carter was here for about 2 years. Mm-hmm. Do you think doing what he did, so he eliminated DEI, he went along with Senate Bill 1 from the State House. Did he, in a way, salvage some of the school's research funding for 2025, 2026 and beyond? Do you know?
My view is that we succeed based on our excellence. And I think what you see in the growth at Ohio State is as much a reflection of the quality of the research, the people, the faculty, the importance of the problems and opportunities we're working on as anything. I have to say, my job is to focus on the future and to drive the car through the windshield and not the rearview mirror. And so, you know, we address and respond to challenges and opportunities in the environment, and we move forward. And we will have more challenges and more opportunity tomorrow and the next day and the next day. And, you know, sometimes, you know, I'm a pilot. You fly. Sometimes the air is nice and still and calm, and you don't have to do much. You look out the window. It's great. And other times, it's turbulent or you get a little headwind. Straight, you still have to fly the plane. And that's what we were trying to do, continue to fly the plane in a way that helps us attack hard problems that are worth doing and take advantage of opportunities that can change people's lives through research.
This is All Sides on 89.7 NPR News. We're talking about Ohio State research with John Horak, Vice President of Research for The Ohio State University. So I've heard a few interviews with students talking about President Carter stepping down, resigning, and all of the situations around that. And they were saying that they want to really like this place. And I heard a couple of quotes where they're saying that it leaves like kind of a bad mark on the university. Do you worry about that with former President Carter stepping down, resigning after only being here for 2 years after President Johnson resigned? Do you worry about a bad mark on Ohio State when it comes to future research?
I think I'll reflect back to the comments that Chairman of our Board of Trustees, John Zeiger, made this morning. So yeah, we were disappointed, right? It's a letdown, and yet at the same time, I have a colleague in Germany. He was the rector of the University of Rostock, which was established in 1419. They just celebrated their 800th anniversary.
That's a long time
ago.
And
he reminded me, he says, you know, universities are very, very robust organizations. He said, you know, we survived the Swedish invasion. We survived Napoleon, the Prussian Wars, World War I, World War II, communism. And yet here we are creating positive social and economic and educational quality of life outcomes. This is an amazing place. Ohio State is an amazing place. And because it's amazing, this is why we steward our responsibilities so purposefully and so carefully. And so, yeah, it's a little bit of a letdown. But is it a black mark? You know, I wouldn't say that in terms of the long-term history of this university. We are excellent. We are moving forward. And our best days are yet to come.
Do you think the Board of Trustees picking a permanent president instead of having an interim and doing a big search again, was that a good move?
I think it's a good move in my own personal opinion. I like stability in leadership, and I think we need stability and quality in leadership. And in finding and asking Robbie to come do that job, I'm thrilled because I think we have excellent leadership and stability going forward.
So we had this show planned with you before President Carter announced that he was resigning. Before his resignation, he was on this show in February, so less than a month ago, and he touted how proud he was of Ohio State's ranking of 12th in the country in research. Yeah. How do you feel ranking? You ranked above Harvard and Yale. How did you feel about that?
Yeah, so a couple things. One, the numbers are great, okay, but they are just one measure of what we do. And that number is a measure of how much we spend in pursuit of research. So it's $53 a second that we're spending in pursuit of cures for cancer and automated automobiles. And you know, it's a lot. It's big. But the number isn't really the thing. The thing is that we are working on problems of consequence, opportunities that will transform lives tomorrow and in the future and in perpetuity. And so, you know, that may be a new way of growing crops. That may be a new way of treating disease. That may be a new way of joining materials together so that we get the opportunity to build new products. I mean, these are the outcomes, like I said, like Kepler, that are most important. The number is important. It gives you a sense of where you are relative to your peers, and we're very proud to be number 12 in the United States at $1.6 billion. Okay, the number is not the thing. The number is a measure of the outcomes you're generating. And so I want to focus on those outcomes, and I think the numbers will take care of themselves.
All right. We'll talk on about some of the outcomes,
sure.
And we'll talk about some of the specific projects in the next segment. But I wanted to talk about this past year. Were you hearing from the people who work for you, the researchers underneath you in your department? Have they been anxious? There's just been so much talk over the past year about cuts to the National Institutes of Health, the National Science Foundation, changes in the way funding is being distributed, and why. Is there a lot of anxiety?
We're all somewhere between anxious, curious, worried, and moving forward, right? So sometimes it activates you to go do some things that help you go forward. But so, yeah, I, you know, it, it's it's always a challenge to operate in an environment where you don't have stability, right? And the dynamic nature of the environment is as much a challenge as the direction of the environment. Sometimes if you had a little bit more certainty, you could respond like, okay, you know, your electric bill at home is going to go up 20%. Okay, I can budget for that. I can figure it out. I hate it. I don't like it, but it doesn't create the same kind of anxiety as it might go up and it might not, and I don't know how much. Mm-hmm. So we're trying to deal with that, and we're trying to help as best we can every single faculty member, every single researcher, every single student at the university find a positive way forward, independent of what may or may not happen in the environment. We have to respond to it. I mean, we're a public institution. We owe it to the citizens of Ohio. We owe it to our stakeholders, to the companies with whom we work, to try to keep going, right? Mm-hmm. And so our job is to do work, to solve problems, to add value, no matter kind of what gets thrown at us or in what environment we're operating in. I'd much rather sail a ship in smooth seas. I'd much rather fly an airplane in calm winds and stable air. But you don't always get to choose that. And so we're gonna, as my colleague says, we're going to pick our hard and we're going to work on it and we're going to move forward and we're going to do the best we can with what we have. George Washington Carver said, take what you have, make something of it, and never be satisfied. I think that's really good advice mm-hmm. for all of us.
We did a show about some of the cuts. I mean, this is probably almost a year ago now, whenever we did that show, and there were cuts that were coming down specifically to research projects that had involved the word women or LGBTQ, and that did impact a couple of research projects at Ohio State. Were those able to be refunded, or are they gone?
So in some places, yes. In some places, no. You know, again, when you've got a portfolio of $1.6 billion, there's always something growing like gangbusters, and there's always something that's having a hard time keeping going. And so, you know, I believe that research is important for across the board, right? And so those things that we are doing, as Ravi said, you know, we don't do it for glory. He said this morning, we do it because we have a responsibility and an obligation to our funders to steward that work, to make sure that we get the best research value for the money that we spend, mm-hmm. and that we really move the needle on these opportunities and challenges that we are pursuing and where we're doing lines of research and lines of creative inquiry.
There was a NPR story maybe about a week or so ago that was talking about some of this funding that was cut from the National Institutes of Health and the National Science Foundation, where Congress slowly and quietly was refunding some of the projects. So like one bill at a time here and there. And has that happened with you? Have you had some things that you thought were cut and then the money came through?
Well, writ large, I think what we saw is that our stakeholders, our representatives in Congress in Washington put back a lot of the money in the mm-hmm. budgets that were proposed to be cut in the president's budget. Mm-hmm. And so through organizations, not just Ohio State, but we're a member of the Association of American Universities and Public and Land-Grant University Associations and these kinds of organizations that represent not only Ohio State, and yes, we're working very closely with our delegation in Washington, but also as a member of the research community to help articulate why it is so important for university research and to continue to do this, as I said, as the first link in the value chain of prosperity for everybody. So that has been helpful, and our Congress has seen why research is important and why research needs to be funded, and has done, in my view, us in America a great service by putting that money back in the budget so that we can continue. Did we get all of it everywhere? Of course not. No, there were some puts and some takes, and we could always, I think, do more research. You know, Winston Churchill said the best investment a nation can make is to put milk into babies. I think the second best investment might be to fortify research so that we can build the nation and the world that we all want, as opposed to whatever we're happening to settle for.
Staying with us after the break is John Horak, Vice President of Research at Ohio State University. And coming up, we're going to go into more detail about some of the research being conducted here at Ohio State right now and where things might go in the future. That's when All Sides continues on 89.7 NPR News. This is Tanya Mosley, co-host of Fresh Air. You'll see your favorite actors, directors, and comedians on late-night TV shows or YouTube. But what you get with Fresh Air is a deep dive. Spend some quality time with people like Billie Eilish, Questlove, Ariana Grande, Stephen Colbert, and so many more. We ask questions you won't hear asked anywhere else. Listen to the Fresh Air podcast from NPR and WHYY. You're listening to All Sides. I'm your host, Amy Jurevich. Research has always been one of the driving forces for prospective students and researchers to come to Ohio State University. And after ranking 12th in the nation for research expenditure, Ohio State has shown that it wants to keep the mantle of a top research college. Who are some of the companies who have partnered with the university, and what are some of the most exciting things to keep up with from OSU researchers? Still with us is John Horak, Vice President of Research at The Ohio State University and leader of the Enterprise for Research, Innovation, and Knowledge. Thanks again for being here, John.
Thanks for having me.
So looking at the research itself, how proud are you of the numbers coming out of the school? I mean, they're big numbers. $1.6 billion is a lot of money.
Yes, as I said, we spend $53 a second on research, and the numbers are great, but the stories behind the numbers, the people, the processes, the outcomes, and the objectives for which we're managing in these research activities are really what just makes me super proud, super excited, and I could talk a lot more time than you've got on the show about all the exciting things going on.
Well, if I made you pick a favorite project, would you be mad at me? There's so many. I'm going to make you pick a favorite one.
I wouldn't be mad at you for long because I would immediately say I have they're all in a tie for first place. But there's a bunch of things going on that I think are really interesting. Some of the most exciting cancer opportunities to really nail down, even at an individual level, because if your cancer and my cancer might not be the same, some tremendously interesting and exciting immunological approaches to cancer, an intersection that's coming between the nuclear reactor and nuclear engineering and cancer for interesting therapy where high-energy neutrons from the reactor can interact with an element called boron-10, and then that can create what's called an alpha particle to attack a tumor. I mean, this is a really interesting intersection. We have a really, really strong amount of work in infectious disease. I mean, we all get old, or we want to. We all get sick. We all want to be well. And so across those domains, I could talk for an hour. We have a very strong, what's called a human performance collaborative that addresses everything from, you know, how do our football players at Ohio State maintain a 48-inch vertical leap to how do I live my best life? I'm a Thursday night hockey player. I'm not going to go play for the Jackets, but I want to play well. I want to be healthy, and that's diet, nutrition, exercise, mental well-being, the food I eat. In a completely different vein, we just completed two sets of parabolic flights. You've seen people on the Vomit Comet where they go into zero G in an airplane to do the first ever laser welding processes in zero G and vacuum as a potential repair and construction technique in space later on. So these are just absolutely amazing things. And again, I can go on and on. So those are some, but not all. We're deeply involved in the next generation of astrophysics missions from NASA, the Nancy Grace Roman Telescope, ground-based astronomy, agriculture. Indoor agriculture is pretty amazing. If you drive out past the Waterman Farm, you see this very large controlled agriculture environment laboratory where we're actually trying to understand how we can grow plants with greater yield, greater nutrition, greater flavor. Chiari Kubota makes some of the best strawberries and tomatoes that you will ever, ever have. And you say, well, that's great. Why are we growing plants indoors? And the answer is when you go to the grocery store here in Ohio, you can actually purchase produce that's grown here in Ohio indoors. A company, for example, called 80 Acre Farms here in Ohio. We want to understand how to do that because, you know, when you have to put $4 worth of diesel fuel to move a head of lettuce from California, that makes it prohibitively expensive. There's a lot of spoilage. If you can grow fresh fruit and vegetables indoors, you can probably do it anywhere.
Yeah, at scale. Yeah.
At scale. Mm-hmm. You have to do it at scale. Mm-hmm. Right, yeah. So we're not all going to be growing food in our basement. So how do we do that so that people get access to more nutritious, more sustainable, better flavor, fresh fresh food. These are all just tremendously exciting things we're working on.
So we talked about this ranking of 12th, and that was using fiscal year 2024. Mm-hmm. So looking ahead more, are the expenditures going to grow? Is that 1.6? If I bring you back a year from now, will 1.6 billion be a bigger number?
So that is an outcome for which we're managing. Mm-hmm. And that 1.6 billion was a 6% increase over the previous year. So the ranking that made us 12th in the United States, as you said, was 2024. We have put into the National Science Foundation our number of 1.6 billion. It's almost like then you go to an audit, right? And the National Science Foundation, it's called the Higher Education Reporting Data Project. All the universities put their numbers to the NSF, mm-hmm. National Science Foundation, racks and stacks and audits, and says, yeah, okay, that's good. We think that, yep, that counts, that's good. And then they will tell us, they tell the world then,
their
based on their audit,
yeah.
what the
mm-hmm.
ranking is. So we don't know, you know, if the person or the university that was number 11, you know, if we were close to them, you know, we could jump to 10 or we could be 13. Okay, whatever. I do expect that number will grow.
Mm-hmm.
Underneath that growth, there are some challenges. There are some opportunities. So we're very blessed. We're sixth in the United States in industry-sponsored research. So of that $1.6 billion, about 10% of the work we do is actually with industry.
So what does that mean, industry-sponsored?
Industry-sponsored.
Like private?
So for example, a company, Acme Aerospace, comes to us and says, you know, at the Aerospace Research Center at the OSU airport, we would like to work with you because we're having this really interesting behavior in these propellers that we make, and we don't really understand how it works. Can you put them in the wind tunnel, and can we do some research together?
Mm.
That's industry-sponsored research, mm-hmm. where the resources and the contractual arrangements are with, you know, a company.
Mm.
You know, we have across the federal government about half of our money that we expend in 2025, $798 million of the $1.6 billion. So just about 48% is federal, but another 10% with industry. And we look for that to grow as well, because as part of our land grant mission, we have to work with companies and to help try to grow the economy here in Ohio. So with Honda and Anduril and Scotts and pharma companies and Procter & Gamble and all the companies here that you see in Ohio, we're eager and in many cases working in a very fulsome way with them to promote their agendas as well through research.
This is All Sides on 89.7 NPR News. We're talking about Ohio State research with John Horak, Vice President of Research at The Ohio State University. Compared to other Ohio schools, I mean, do you work with Case Western, Ohio
yes.
University,
others? Absolutely.
Yeah. I mean, they're smaller, but yeah.
Well, but no university has everything, and mm-hmm. every university has something, mm-hmm. right? And so this is also a beauty of the university landscape. You know, I was just talking to Raj Balani, my colleague from Denison yesterday, right? We want to work in collaboration with other universities because this is how we put together the teams that are needed to solve problems or address opportunities. And we are stronger when we partner, and we're very, very good at partnering. This is one of the reasons, for example, that we work with Voyager Technologies on a future space station that's coming called Starlab. And our role at Ohio State is to help bind the university community together in a coherent network, community, to fortify the research that will go on in space after the International Space Station is retired in 2030 or 2032. And it's because universities do this as a matter of course. We write proposals all the time. We have a hybrid autonomous manufacturing engineering research center. We're partnered with Northwestern and Tennessee and Ohio State. And so we do this all the time. And so, yes, so partnering with universities is super important.
There's a new research consortium that just launched. Ohio State hosted the first meeting. It's to advance space research in particular.
So we have a very aggressive portfolio of future and current research in spaceflight. I mentioned in astronomy and astrophysics, Ohio State is top shelf. We are as good in astronomy and astrophysics as we are at college football. That's
Mm-mm.
not.
Oh,
that is just
okay.
truth. That's not hyperbolic.
Yeah.
But what we see coming is in the future, space is just going to be another laboratory, right? Mm-hmm. And we've seen this. We've only begun to crack this open on the International Space Station. And what we see coming is, you know, no matter how much research expenditures you put into a facility, I'm not going to be able to turn gravity off on the ground, right?
Mm-hmm.
I'm not going to produce the same radiation environment. I'm not going to be able to get the same hard vacuum that I get in space. I don't have the same stressors. You know, you go to space, it might be great to look out the window. It's a terrible thing to do to your body. And so many times the presence of gravity or the absence of these other things either mask processes that you really want to understand to understand how your plant is growing, how your chemical reaction is working, how your pharmaceutical protein crystallizes or whatever. And so we're working really hard to forge the future where spaceflight is just another laboratory like a nuclear reactor. My dream in the future, you know, you walk around campus and you see people on a tour and you have a very energetic and enthusiastic mm-hmm. undergraduate student walking backwards, talking about all these things. And I would love them to be able to say, and, you know, and here's the RPACs where we have exercise and here's the library. Be careful who you kiss in front of the library. You might marry them someday. And I'd really love to show you this one lab we got, but I can't because it's in space.
Oh.
Can you imagine? I mean, we have regional campuses.
Yeah.
It's a little stretch, and I'm dreaming a little bit today, but I think it's okay to dream.
Yeah.
You can imagine a future where Ohio State, or maybe it's Ohio State and the consortium of Big Ten universities, we actually have our own laboratory in space. That would be amazing.
Only if it's shaped like the Blocko, right?
Of course. Going to be the Ohio State University in orbit and everybody else. naming rights, probably I'll ask Sarah Rubin how we can name that.
Tell me a little bit about private funding, because you talked about the industry and we talked about federal funding, but what about some private partnerships?
So we have a very strong partnership with Honda, for example. Mm-hmm. We just celebrated the 25th anniversary of that partnership. Honda's been an amazing partner in research, established in part because of the factory that was put in Marysville back in the 1980s. I work on almost a daily basis with Bob Nelson, and the Honda partnership is huge and super important for us. You know, that's one example. I will meet later today with colleagues from JPMorgan Chase. Mm-hmm. You might be interested to know that JPMorgan Chase, I think, is the single largest hirer of our engineering graduates.
Because, really?
Well, for computer science, right?
Oh.
Because it's, you know, it's an information company as mm-hmm. much as it is credit cards and finance. And so, you know, we meet with them today. We have an entire great dedicated team led by Louisa Newland here. It's a partnership across research and corporate and foundational giving, where we're trying to make sure that we're responsive to all the needs of companies. Some want to, help students. Some might want to name a conference room. Some might want to engage in research. And we need to make sure that we have sort of every tool in the toolbox to be able to respond to whatever that company might want or need.
Do you have any personal research projects you're working on, or are you more in the admin area now?
Oh, well, yeah, I got a lot of both. I currently have about 7 students, PhD students. One will graduate, Spencer, better be writing your dissertation. One will graduate in the area of nuclear thermal propulsion. And so what we're trying to do, we've been flying rocket engines since, you know, rocket engines were invented, but we're using chemical propulsion, basically combustion.
Mm-hmm.
And there's only so much energy you can get out of hydrogen and oxygen burning it together in the space shuttle main engine because of the thermochemistry. There's just only so much energy in those molecular bonds and so on and so forth. And the question then is, well, how do I get to Mars? Mm-hmm. Well, right now you can only go about every 22 months. If you want to send people round trip, you're fully committed for over 600-day mission. That's just, you want to be locked in a can with me for 600 days, right? Okay,
that sounds
no,
like a lot.
Exactly,
yeah.
Not. Plus the radiation exposure and everything can be harmful. So we would like to either send more things, send them faster, or do both. Hmm. And the way you do that is you start to think about how could I use a fission reactor in space to heat up the working fluid with the stuff that you see coming out of the back of the rocket engine. Temperature is the king. Okay. And I can only get a certain temperature out of combustion. But if I can make it hotter by using the nuclear reactor, and we, the United States, built and fired, we didn't launch them, but we tested them on the ground, these kinds of rocket engines in the 60s and 70s, like a program called NERVA, a program called Rover. So I've got students working on everything from the materials challenges associated with that, computational fluid dynamics modeling, how to build test prototype test stands that kind of give you a sense of like, okay, yeah, we think it's going to work like this. That's going on at the Center for Design and Manufacturing Excellence over on Kinnear Road. And it's a really interesting partnership across materials, computational fluid dynamics and quantitative science like that, building of stuff, space flight. I mean, the students are just super engaged. That's one example.
Yeah, getting to Mars faster. All right.
And back.
And back. Oh, that's important too.
Important.
Yes. Well, we are out of time, but I want to thank you for joining us. John Horak, Vice President of Research for The Ohio State University. Thanks for coming in today.
It's been a pleasure, and I'm always happy to join, and thanks for thinking of us, and we'll bring some good news back.
And coming up, we're going to look at the national picture for research and what's going on in the next few years. That's when All Sides continues on 89.7 NPR News. You're listening to All Sides. I'm your host, Amy Jurevich. Since World War II, federal funding has fueled the multi-billion dollar research environment that has created everything from barcodes to the internet. The past year of changes from the Trump administration has shaken up priorities and dropped funding for many schools and organizations. But has some of that funding returned? Has the national research sphere recovered? And what does the future look like for research in both the public and private sector? Joining us now, we have Ian Morgan, an early career researcher at the National Institutes of Health. Welcome back to the show, Ian.
Hi, thanks for having me again, Amy.
And we have Anna Darling, an Ohio State neuroscience graduate student and a member of Invest in Science. Welcome to the show, Anna.
Hi, thanks. Happy to be here.
And I wanted to add for Ian Morgan, I want to add that he is a steward in the NIH Fellows Union and is speaking in a personal capacity and not on behalf of the federal government. So, Ian, now that it's been around a year since the initial cuts were announced and the changes at the National Science Foundation, the National Institutes of Health, and there was this talk of, you know, sweeping cuts, that's when you came on the last time, were the cuts as deep as we initially thought?
Yeah, Amy, I think that that's a good point. I mean, I calculated it recently, and over the past year in my job, I've had almost 6 months of major disruptions in my ability to actually do research. But when we look at the wider sort of research sphere, a lot of people, the administration had proposed these 40% cuts where I work at the NIH to research funding, which would have been completely devastating. And we didn't see Congress actually enact those cuts. But we actually only saw a small, modest increase in the funding that is going for life-saving biomedical research. So I think the final amount was about $47.2 billion, which seems like a lot of money. But actually, when you adjust that for inflation, that's 8.8% less than FY, so the full year 2003 levels. And so we're actually not investing as much as we should be to keep pace. So that means our purchasing power and our ability to do research right now is less than what we have been before.
I did hear a story on NPR about a week ago that Congress basically didn't enact everything that President Trump said. They slowly, perhaps a little quietly, reappropriated key funding here and there, changed a few budget things here and there. Did you see that happening, though, where you were like, it wasn't everything? Congress put things back in.
Yeah, so we saw that in some ways. We saw that there were checks for something for the directors, that the vacancies in the directors and specific saying, you know, you will have to do this that Congress put into the bill. But one thing that actually was missing from that is something called multi-year funding, which last year led to a 24% decrease in the number of grants that went out, even though it's the same amount of money. And so we actually saw Congress keep it at the same levels, at 39% levels. So that means this year, again, compared to 2024, we are going to have likely 24% less grants going out to fund research. I mean, that's 24% less research being done by labs across the country and here in Ohio.
Anna, let's bring you into the conversation. What's the feeling for someone like you, a grad student just starting your career? Do you feel worried right now or more optimistic than you did maybe 9 months ago?
I'm definitely feeling worried. I'm in my first year. So if anyone's familiar with a first year graduate student's time, it's basically finding a lab to do my thesis in, my PhD thesis. And I'm being told throughout every month that I'm rotating in a new lab that, "Oh, we're just waiting on funding. We can't have a grad student yet. We can't take one on yet because we can't guarantee you 5 years of funding." And I'm really struggling to find my home for my next 5 years to study the research that I want to do.
Okay, so you can't just find funding 1 year at a time. You have to find the 5 years.
Correct. They want to do the best by you and make sure you can complete your full thesis in their lab. So 1 year at a time isn't really going to cut it.
So where are you looking for funding? I mean, are we talking like federal funding is what you're looking for, or do you look other places too?
The majority of labs here, at least in neuroscience specifically, are funded by the NIH. And so that's where these scientists get most of their funding from. There's little that take or that have access to private funds. But there's also opportunities for students to apply for funding. Specifically, the National Science Foundation has a GRFP, so a graduate research fellowship program. And I've applied for that. You can only do that in the first year of your graduate program or before you enter a graduate program. I actually applied last year and got honorable mention, which is really great, and expected to get over that hump and get funded this year. But this year I got rejected without review with the same exact project.
Oh
So
no. What
really a bummer.
that, yes, bummer's a word for it. I said you're an Ohio State neuroscience graduate student. What are you trying to study?
My special interest is in women's reproductive health and mental health. So I'm looking for labs, which there are plenty of here at Ohio State, but that is one of the specific topics of research that are definitely not being prioritized by this administration.
Yeah, okay. So that's what I was getting at, because you have the words reproduction in there and the word women, right? So,
Yep.
Ian, when you work more, you're strictly in the public sector. Early on in 2025, there were battles between the National Institutes of Health and the Trump administration over the types of projects that were being funded and what words were in the titles of the research projects. So, is that still happening where Congress reappropriated the money, but if you had the word women or LGBTQ in your title, maybe not that?
Yeah, so there have been actually some sort of news articles that have come out this that maybe at the time when Doge was doing this, that they were actually putting each of the grants into ChatGPT and then putting in there and asking, is this DEI, and getting this list of words back. Actually, the Labor Health and Human Services, the committee in Congress, just put out a report a few weeks ago about the words that were being screened in grants, right? The things that weren't allowed. And it had things like women, it had things like pregnancy, right? It had things like people of color and stuff like that. I mean, I think whenever I've talked to my colleagues, they've been telling people, you should still apply, you should still try to do this. They're going to do their best job to make sure that the best research gets funded. But what we don't want is people self-censoring their work and not doing this work and not applying for that work. So people should definitely still be applying. But it is a concern, right? We need this work to get done. This is important on behalf of the American people. And the fact that this administration is still screening those grants is a huge problem.
And Anna, we did a show about potential brain drain in the United States, which is jeopardizing research, with key researchers moving their studies to Europe to find a more stable lab or more stable funding. Have you considered that at all? Have you considered leaving Ohio State or the United States?
Yeah, hopefully my program isn't listening, but it's very uncertain whether or not I'm going to find the lab that I want to do the research that I'm passionate about here, if there's no guaranteed funding for me completing my thesis. I've definitely considered it, but right now I'm in a secure spot and the graduate program is taking care of me and they're building up a buffer of money to support me if I don't find a lab right away, which is historically not been as common. And so they're also depleting like the next incoming cohorts of students so that they can have more money to do that because they are expecting that students are not going to be accepted into labs as soon as they normally would be. So it's definitely on my mind, but hopefully not having to take that step yet.
Ian, have you had any colleagues, leave the United States, take their talents to Europe?
Yeah, so I'm at the point where in the next few years I'm going to be starting my own lab. So going and looking at universities or somewhere at the NIH to start my own lab. And a lot of people who are in a similar situation are having trouble finding jobs if they're even available. and trying to hold off to see if there are any jobs. But as we see other countries invest more and more into biomedical research and other science, they're looking at saying, well, maybe I should go somewhere else. And that's really unfortunate because we want to do the work here. We want to do the work on behalf of the American people. We want people in Ohio, right? We want people across the country and to fund them. And so trying to chase that off seems like a totally self-inflicted wound that's completely unnecessary.
This is All Sides on 89.7 NPR News. We're talking about national research with Ian Morgan, an early career researcher at the National Institutes of Health, and Anna Darling, an Ohio State neuroscience graduate student and a member of Invest in Science. Anna, tell me what Invest in Science is. What is the goal for that group?
Yeah, so Invest in Science is, I think, broadly a science communication organization. We're not yet a nonprofit, but hopefully in the next coming years or months or so. And what we do is we try to give scientists a platform and the tools and opportunities to talk about the research they're doing every day in the lab to their communities and to the public. And this way, I think, is a good way to put a face to the actual research that's being done rather than the big grant terms or the cutting to spending across the university and things that, like, people outside of the science field don't really understand, but now we can see, oh, this person is here doing work about ALS and helping cure diseases and cancer. And we're hoping to platform those scientists so that the public can understand that this work is really impactful.
Yeah, Ian, what are your thoughts on funding cuts and just attitudes toward science research? I mean, what has happened with just all the news out of the Trump administration and its view of research, where sometimes it's even been said that he finds it to be a waste of money? How does that impact the average American's view of research, in your opinion?
Well, I think I just want to start by going back and giving a huge shout out to Anna and other people and other scientists who are actually speaking up and really talking about the value of research, because this makes real impact on people's everyday lives. I was just talking to someone in the healthcare industry yesterday, and they were telling me, like, we see kids with cancer who are getting, these antibacterial resistance infections. And my research focuses on antibacterial resistance. And they don't know what to do with these kids. And the hope of the type of research I'm doing is that we can come up with new treatments for these kids so that they don't have to suffer when private industries are just not focusing on that because it's not very profitable. And sort of that's what's at stake here when we're talking about cuts to research funding and people having to self-censor themselves, like that kind of work. And so the work that Anna's doing to be able to talk to the American people and really show the value and not just focus on the bad things that are happening is really important. And we've been able to communicate that, I think, effectively. I think scientists are really stepping up. They're speaking to their members of Congress. They're speaking to the public. We've sort of caught a little bit flat-footed at first, but there's this whole infrastructure of people who said, you know what? What we do is valuable, and we're going to tell people about that. And I think those effects are really showing.
Anna, did the turmoil of the past year make you think you wanted to change your focus, or perhaps even like work in the private sector someday? Does it make you change your view of your 10-year plan?
Absolutely. If the research I'm passionate about and really want to spend my life doing, and that's women's reproductive health research, if it's going to be limited by the government, I really don't want to have that restriction upon my future. I wanted to be a professor. That was my goal, is to have a lab of my own and stay in academia. But if leaving that is the only way I can do the research that I want to, that I'm passionate about and has personal implications for myself and for, if I had a daughter or my family members, then that might have to be the way I go. And it's just sad because it's not a way that I wanted to go at first. I wanted to train the next generation of scientists.
Ian, we only have a minute left, but are you seeing companies and universities stepping in to try to maybe even take projects away from NIH or NSF so that they, the projects can continue, maybe like remove the federal part?
Yeah, I was just at a conference recently and talking to a lot of people who are trying to step in and cover as much as they can, but there's just not the infrastructure to be able to do that. There's not enough from that you're going to get from private funding to be able to cover everything. The NIH is considered to be the largest public funder of biomedical research in the world right now. And so you can't cover that with private companies. And so that's why it's really important for everybody to be speaking up right now, talking to the representatives, talking about the importance of biomedical research so that we can keep that investment and not let it go away.
Thank you so much for your time today. We've been talking with Ian Morgan, an early career researcher at the National Institutes of Health. Ian, thank you for joining us.
Thank you.
And Anna Darling, Ohio State neuroscience graduate student and a member of Invest in Science. Thank you, Anna, for joining us today.
Thanks so much.
And you're listening to All Sides on 89.7 NPR News. I'm Amy Jurevich. And if you missed any part of today's show, you can listen back at our website, wosu.org/allsides. You can also subscribe to the All Sides podcast. Every episode is available in the WOSU Public Media mobile app. You can also like the show on Facebook and follow us on Instagram. Our Instagram handle is at allsideswosu. This is 89.7 NPR News. I'm Amy Jurevich.
This is Tanya Mosley, co-host of Fresh Air. You'll see your favorite actors, directors, and comedians on late-night TV shows or YouTube. But what you get with Fresh Air is a deep dive. Spend some quality time with people like Billie Eilish, Questlove, Ariana Grande, Stephen Colbert, and so many more. We ask questions you won't hear asked anywhere else. Listen to the Fresh Air podcast from NPR and WHYY.